You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? It's, I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
Truth seekers, please understand, Mental Dialogue is much more than just a talk show. Each and every Saturday, we communicate with you for two reasons, to dialogue and connect. On the dialogue side, we cater to you intellectual outcasts who feel you have no place for honest discourse on race, sex, culture, and African-American business. On the connect side, we've created a community where you can connect with experts specifically in finance, whether personal or business, and mental health, whether it's trauma or to optimize performance, along with all the other skill sets from other MD community members. Our mission was to create a virtual nationwide neighborhood where African Americans learn to trade ideas, goods, and services through social media, meetups, and this podcast. To become a neighbor of the Mental Dialogue Community Club, please visit us at mentaldialogue.com. We are better with you than we are without you. We can be neighbors even though we don't live next to each other. Hashtag raise the culture. Good morning to all the intellectual outcasts out there listening. Good morning, Latrice, my amazing queen of intellect co-host. How you doing this morning, Latrice? Thank you for being with me. I'm glad to have you, particularly for this show, because you have a background that relates to this discussion question. So if you will, queen, say hello to the intellectual outcast. Give them a little bit of your background before we introduce our special guest this morning, but thank you for being with me.
Sure. Good morning, Montoya. Good morning to everyone listening in. I am Latrice Ross. I am a diversity, equity, and inclusion professional. It's work that I've done for the last 15 years or so. And this topic is particularly interesting to me because it brings to question our capabilities and how others perceive those capabilities.
No, love it. Again, glad to have you on the show. For anybody that's a new listener, I always keep a queen of intellect to keep us guys in check because I got a couple of male guests on this thing with me, my man B-Funk or Brent House, well, B-Funk as I call him, but Brent House to the public, if you will. Brent, you've been on the show before, so thank you for being with us. If you will, say hello to Latrice, hello to the intellectual outcast, and give a little bit of your background as well. Thank you for being with us.
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having me, Smitty. And Latrice, thanks for allowing me to join you guys on the show. As you said, it is an interesting topic for me as well. I am currently a pilot at United Airlines. Been there just over 5 years now. Been flying commercial just over 6 years. I graduated from the United States Air Force Academy in 97. Became a Air Force pilot not long after that, and then I flew in the Air Force for just under 20 years and transitioned to the commercial airline world. So I've always dreamt of flying since a kid. My mother was in the Air Force. And one of the big barriers for me, had I not lucked up and gone to the Air Force Academy, I had no idea how to get there. So we'll talk today about some of the programs that my airline and other airlines out there have to cut into that gap, that barrier, knock down that barrier of how to get there, how to pay for it, because that's one of the huge barriers is the cost. So I look forward to getting into that discussion, but more importantly, answering the question as the topic of your show today, Smitty. Thanks for having me.
No, glad to have you. One of our other brothers from the Air Force Academy, Keith Ensor, is on this show with us. So thank you for being with us. If you will, Keith, introduce yourself to the intellectual outcast. Again, you are a graduate of the academy with myself and Brent. We all graduated in 97, so I'll steal that little part of your background. But if you will, you're in the airline industry, from what I understand as well. So give your background and also say hello to Latrice, our queen of intellect, with us this morning. But thank you for being with us, Keith.
Hey, a pleasure to be with you, man. Latrice, good to talk to you today. Smitty, Brant, good to hear from you again, man. Hey, I'm Keith Ensor. Same deal. Went to the academy, Graduated, did 11 years in the active Air Force, 11 years in the reserve, flying C-130s and C-17s. I've been flying for Southwest Airlines for it'll be my 17th year this year. I mean, that's pretty much it, all over the world. And I actually have a son who's my number three kid, is in the middle of pilot training on the private side right now. So he's about, hopefully, I don't know, 6 months away from getting his private pilot's license. So just a little bit of experience there. That's all. I look forward to talking to everybody and hearing about it for sure.
No, I love it. You're passing the legacy down, Keith. I love that. So for those, if you are a first-time listener, I go by Black Socrates. We take the Socratic method to all of these discussions on race, sex, and culture. And so we put the show in the form of a question every Saturday, if you will. And this morning's discussion question is, do we need DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion initiatives to get more blacks and women pilots? Do we need DEI initiatives to get more blacks and women pilots? And so we always start the show pretty simple, unique way. Latrice, we'll start with you, Queen. When you first heard the question worded that particular way, what was your first initial thought? Not the second or third thought, but just the initial thought. And we'll get to our guest initial thought, go to break, and then we'll get into the second and third and deeper thoughts after the break. But if you will, Queen, what did you initially think when you saw the question worded that way?
What an inane question, because of course we do.
Hey, I did.
That was my thought.
No, I love it. That, if that was the initial thought, I appreciate that. Brent, I'll go with you next. When I called you and said, hey, here's the show we're attempting to do, when you saw the question worded, I don't think I had the question formulated when I asked you to be on the show. I can't remember if I did or not. But when you finally saw the question worded this particular way, obviously United Airlines is part of the reason we're doing this show, if you will. But what was your initial thought to the questions particularly worded that way?
I think it is a yes to the answer to that question. And I think just if we look at historically in the history of the demographic of pilots, I mean, right now it's disproportionately white male, and left to our own devices without considering some of the things that DEI programs allow us to consider or drive us to consider. I don't know that we could get to where we need to be to increase the number of minority and female pilots, and then it's part of a larger problem that we're trying to address. We need pilots. Take the minority out there. We need pilots. DEI allows us to address the challenge of a declining pool. We're retiring more than we're bringing in every year, and we have to increase the pool of candidates that we are bringing into the profession. So yes, I do think that is that is the answer to your question.
All right, fair enough. So you got Brother Keith. Keith, if you will, same thing for you, brother. Before we go to the initial break. When you saw the question worded this particular way, I know we got you in here last minute, so thank you for making time for us. But what was your initial thought? Again, we just keep it 100 on this show, if you will, but just your initial thought to seeing the question worded that way. I didn't realize you've been doing this thing for 17 years. Definitely appreciate that's a long time in the industry, brother. But, yeah, just your initial thought to do we need DEI initiatives to get more blacks and women pilots?
My initial thought was 100% yes. It's actually really scary. Flying through the Air Force and with Southwest, and I know people in the other airlines, it's like a terrible disproportionality that happens, and I'm actually not sure why. No matter where we're at in whatever corporation or whatever side of business you want to be on, it's always better to have different perspectives, different upbringings, different ways of thought. And it's just pretty much a travesty is what I would call it in the airline industry.
Hey, let's get to this break. We'll come back, maybe talk about some of the numbers just to kind of give people, in a sense, the landscape. And let's get into this discussion. And after the break, we'll also hear some words from United CEO Scott Kirby, in a sense, who kicked off, I would say, some of the controversy as it relates to this discussion and using DEI to actually advocate for more people of color and women into the pilot profession. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. Are you looking for a deep, meaningful relationship that eventually leads to marriage, but tired of swiping left on dating apps, tired of being ghosted, and tired of online relationship coaches without relationships themselves? Well, psychotherapist Monique Knight has the recipe to help you find your perfect match, and she brings you the Secret Sauce Relationship Bootcamp. With support from trained couples counselors, marriage and family therapists, this course will empower you to build meaningful relationships. This 8-week bootcamp offers a structured journey for singles to meet and interact as our team of experts guides you through topics like effective communication, conflict management, and intimacy. Registration is now open for the second boot camp after the first one sold out in less than 2 weeks. The next boot camp starts on April 1st. Register at comprehensivefamilycare.org/SSB or call 404-585-7533. Again, that is 404-585-7533 for details. Remember, love is not just a matter of chance, it's a skill that can be developed.
The CEO of United Airlines has just promised that he is going to implement DEI all throughout his company, up to and including the cockpit.
How is diversity and diversity targets working into the Aviate Academy?
We have committed that 50% of the class of the classes will be women or people of color. Today, only 19% of our pilots at United Airlines are women or people of color. And by the way, from all the data I've seen, that's the highest of any airline in the country.
White males don't just dominate in the cockpits, also in the C-suite at United Airlines.
Well, look, at United, I'm proud of the diversity that we actually have in our C-suite. I think if you look around corporate America.
Correct me if I'm saying, though, this is just based off your website, the people you list as executives, but out of 11 people, 3 are women. I believe 1 is a person of color.
That's correct. But, you know, in corporate America, I think, you know.
That's a low bar. How do you raise your own bar?
Well, a lot of this is, you know, focusing on it. We have programs to, one of the things we do is for every job when we do an interview, we require women and people of color to be involved in the interview process, bringing people in early in their careers as well, and giving them those opportunities and creating a stronger bench.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Latrice Ross, a special guest, our commercial airline pilots Brent House, as well as Keith Ensor, as we hear specifically what Scott Kirby, again, the United Airlines CEO, talked about the initiative to get more people of color and women into the pilot, into the cockpit specifically, and then he highlighted the C-suites, which is the upper management of the entire company, also highlighted in that cut as well. And with the numbers being as low as they are throughout the industry, as Keith highlighted, Latrice, we'll start with you. It's to a degree, I would say simply, and I guess maybe as an African-American specifically, seems like it would be a simple thing to say, hey, let's get more of who's not in this profession into this position. Seems like that would be a simple thing, but on the whole contraire, in this country has been anything but simple, as there was a lot of, as I like to say, backlash to his comments of wanting to do this in the future. So you being in DEI, I'll just kind of get your thoughts to seeing this create, quote unquote, a controversy for us to even have a show today. Your thoughts, Queen.
Well, it's not surprising that there is controversy when we consider how our history has been whitewashed, and we've raised a couple of generations now who have been raised not to see color. Both of these factors play into the situation that we're experiencing now, where people who are a part of the global minority now believe that they are being discriminated against by these initiatives. And the only way that we can course correct, which is going to be difficult considering that they are the power majority in this country, is that we begin to teach the true history of this country and begin to think more from a fact-based perspective instead of a feelings-based perspective. But the fact that he received backlash for his comments, not surprising to me at all.
No, fair enough. Keith, I'll start with you, if you will. You are represented mightily in the in that field, if you will. You're in the higher, the 90 percentile of those represented, if you will. But I know prior to the break, you thought that it was a travesty to see the numbers throughout your years of not seeing, if you will, others from whether it be other genders or other demographics entering your space, and you thought it was a travesty. So just kind of want to hear your thoughts, because unfortunately, my man Brent also shared with me a web thread within United, and there were other pilots in his field, in his company, saying, hey, we need to strike down this DEI. So clearly people can have different positions on it, and we're open to hearing all of those positions. But I highlighted that you said it was a travesty, and the numbers have always been super low. So your thoughts about this actually being a backlash for Scott Kirby to say, hey, I want to increase the numbers only at aviation flight school, per se, to hopefully trickle down into more people becoming pilots. Your thoughts on this becoming a backlash, as I like to say?
Yeah, I fully agree with Latrice, and I'm not sure exactly the answer as to why it is. Like you said, I'm on the other side of it. I'm a Caucasian male, so I'm in the whatever it is, the 85-90% that it is. However, I've lots of friends in and out of the industry one way or the other, and now I happen to have a son who is who's my wife's African American, so he gets to categorize in the other side of it now, and I'm trying to help him navigate the way through that. I don't know the reason that is happening, but I will confirm of what you said that Brant had said about a thread or two, and it's very, we'll say very similar to, oh, you guys, I'm going to put air quotes up here. You're not really earning it. You're getting the extra thing ahead, just like college and things like that. And that's the perspective from the majority in general. That's not my perspective. I just want to make that clear.
Oh, no, you're fine, but, brother. Yeah, yeah, we hear you clearly. You're speaking right through it. But
yeah.
We want to speak to – and again we'd love to have any perspective, because that's what we do on this show. We have open and honest conversations.
Yeah.
But we hear you loud and clear. I'm going to run to Brant real quick, because, again, he shared the thread. And speaking of college, Keith, if you recall, we went through some stuff at the academy in reference to DEI. And let's also add the context that currently there is a lot of backlash against DEI throughout the country in a lot of areas. It just so happened that Scott Kirby kicked up this particularly for your industry by saying, here's what I'm going to do. But it's in the face of a lot of DEI stuff being shut down, or affirmative action, if I were, and Latrice, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was literally just shot down really kind of for the first time in a long time at the Supreme Court level in the past. When different cases would get that far, the Supreme Court would kind of uphold it. But I think recently that there was a case that kind of had it overturned at some level. So again, Latrice, correct me on that part. And then I want to hear Brant's thoughts about sharing that thread. And I'm pretty sure, I'm assuming you're not surprised, Brant. But Latrice, am I right about a recent action at the Supreme Court? I think I saw something in the last six months.
You are, and that's kind of the constant thing that we're seeing now, that affirmative action has been overturned, and it's no surprise that it's happening. This is something that's been planned over the course of the last 50 or so years, and they've spent that time. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist by any stretch of the imagination, but the last 50 years, the folks in power on the conservative side have been moving these chess pieces to finally have in place a Supreme Court that would overturn affirmative action. And what we're seeing now, those subsequent cases coming before them and being overturned. So things are going to, according to plan, because they've been planning this for about 50 years or so.
Fair enough. All right, Brant, again, you shared the thread. I assume, I'm making an assumption here, that you wasn't surprised in a sense by the thread, but it just reminded me of some things we went through at the academy, but just wanted to hear your thoughts, and particularly to, again, I would even offer that Scott Kirby coming out publicly at a time where what Latrice just highlighted happening in on the political side of this thing is actually brave and bold to, I'll throw that out, at a time where DEI is now being frowned upon, because there was a time where DEI was favored just a few years ago after the George Floyd situation. In a sense, the country vowed to, you know, make changes, if you will, but politically, what Latrice just talked about has been happening over the course of the past 50 years. But your thoughts about the thread within your own company, if you will, brother.
Yeah, and you're speaking about a thread where a young lady asked if somebody could enter her proxy vote for the end to DEI at United. No, not surprised. And another member of our pilot organization responded, African American male. He's been with the company since the 80s, and he responded, let her know, you need to know the context of what you're talking about. He's been through many waves of challenges regarding race. She was talking about, we're doing this at a union meeting. And this gentleman said there was a time when the union would not even support black pilots when things would happen. They're supporting pilots who get in trouble for DUIs, domestic abuse. They making sure they keep their jobs, but they would not do that for come to any kind of support for African American pilots. So not terribly surprised. I just want to put some things in context too. You and I, we are all Keith, all classmates at the academy. Scott Kirby, the CEO of my company, is an Air Force Academy graduate as well. I think if I'm not mistaken, he did not make it through pilot training. He started in Air Force pilot training and didn't make it through, but obviously has done very well for himself in the aviation industry. The whole premise for me, the foundation of why we need more black pilots for me is we need more pilots. I guess that's kind of where I settle in right there. We need more pilots. And I know Southwest does the same thing. If you are a flight attendant, gate agent, maintenance person, you apply to our program, Aviate. We're going to do everything we can to get you in there. I know on the civilian side, if you walk in off the street, you have the opportunity to get into Aviate. That helps. The barriers are financing. The barriers are where can I get it done in a short period of time? And these companies are doing, taking those initiatives to do that. Without DEI, what DEI does is it says, what do we need to do? How can we do it? And most importantly, put resources to it to make sure it happens. So the advertising, we have United has a finance structure with Chase Bank as a partner, multiple training facilities around the country that are supporting it. So that's what DEI does for it is, what's the problem? How do we fix it? And let's put resources to it. And that's any company you go to. If you're not putting resources to, and that's dollars for the most part, not just dollars either. We are sending pilots down there to be a part of our actual pilots, taking them off the line and sending them down there to help with training or managing the program as well. So it's a big move to say you want to apply resources to this program, to these types of programs.
It makes a lot of sense. Nah, thank you for all of that context. Latrice, I'm pretty sure, I guess I stopped making assumptions, just let you speak for yourself, but in the sense that when Brett highlights that thread that was in his own company of this one lady saying, hey, put in my proxy vote to get rid of DEI, this is an initiative that actually is, in a sense, going to put resources, as Brent said, to encourage, if you will, in this case of her being the one saying, hey, put in my proxy vote to go against this, actually to promote for women to enter the space. But she is a woman, says, hey, I don't want this DEI thing. Queen, if you will, speak to why someone might say I'm against DEI, even if it, quote unquote, helps my gender. Any thoughts on that, if you will, Queen?
I think that in these instances, they feel that even if they are benefiting from a program, they don't want others to get ahead of them by taking advantage of these programs. It's something that we see all the time. Psychologists talk about this phenomenon all the time. We see it in the political arena when white women went to the polls and voted. 53-56% voted for conservatives who then took away their right to bodily autonomy. So we see this happening all the time. It's not surprising, and it's because I don't want other folks to benefit from programs that I may benefit from. Unconsciously, I think they know that perhaps because of unearned disadvantages that certain folks have, that they will be okay in the long run because they don't have those unearned disadvantages that black and brown people have.
Well, makes sense. Again, just wanted to get into the perspective. Keith, I know I may let me know how long you can stay on with us. I got another brother in the queue who actually owns a flight school, so we're going to get torn on here in a second as well. But Keith, just want to be respectful of your time. But just wanted to hear your thoughts. I know you kept highlighting obviously your perspective, and you see the need as well. But are you familiar with any peers who, in a sense, may feel like a DEI initiative is unfair? And we're going to hear some cuts later that gets into some of the thoughts. We're going to hear cuts from Candace Owens, cuts from Elon Musk. Again, I don't know how long you're going to be with us, if you will. But Keith, any perspective on those who feel like it's not, quote unquote, fair to have a specific initiative for people of color and women? Any discussion amongst any of your peers about that type, from that perspective, if you will? Any thoughts?
Yes, there is talk from that perspective from my peers, and it's actually really disheartening. It's a weird thing, and Latrice, you hit it right on the head. It's a perceived leg up, but at the end of the day, I don't know. I see it as a point of, hey, there's not just one size piece of pie where, hey, you know, there's a dude that gets hired next year or whatever, and he's going to take a piece of my pie. It doesn't work like that in the airline industry. It's all about seniority. So the faster people can get through, and if we can alleviate some of those roadblocks to starting to become a pilot. Now, I've flown probably in the past year, I've flown with four or five guys who are about, actually, let me take it back, three guys and one woman who's about, they're 23, 22, 23. So they have hustled through.
Wow.
And if we can eliminate some of those roadblocks on the way through, now trust me, they're fast burners.
I definitely know that. Absolutely.
I wouldn't be mature enough to be able to handle a big airplane at that point. But that it's pretty crazy that you can get in that long. And I'm sure Brandt's going to talk about it. But from they're looking for pilots so hard, we'll say they're looking so hard for pilots right now that you don't even need, not that we had to have it really, because college degrees, you don't even need a college degree anymore. You go through a program and they'll teach you everything you need to know. So it's more like a trade at this point. And that just highlights the point that we need more pilots. Like Brandt said, it doesn't matter. They're not even worried about the gender, color, or anything, background. As long as you pass the check, you're going to go. But back to your question, what you were speaking of is, I don't know. I think it's an old school mentality that people need to get out of. And I hearken back to what Latrice had said. He said, you know what, with this new generation coming up, stuff is getting a lot more even. There's no more perceived injustices from the majority. And it's slowly but surely turning, I think, from my perspective at least.
Well, hey, Scott Kirby is doing his part in a sense from one perspective. Again, we're open to all perspectives, so definitely if you want to join the show, 646 646-787-1691. Again, that's 646-787-1691. I see a lot of callers out there. You do have to press 1 if you want to give us your 3 cents on this morning's discussion. We are going to go to another break, and I'm going to try to bring Brother Torin on, who has a flight school here in the Georgia area. Definitely want to get his perspective on some of this. But again, we are open to all dialogues. We do hard conversations on race, sex, and culture. So we will dig into this. Keith, I want to make sure I'm respectful of your time. How much time you got with us, brother? Just want to make sure I keep that in mind before I just keep you on without making sure you need to go.
Man, it's all good. My wife is out, and I'm sitting, and I would love to stay on. It's okay. But
absolutely. I'm letting you stay for as long as you want. That's why I'm asking you real quick to make sure. Hey, like you said, wife out, the honey-do list is short today, so you can stay with us. I'm with it.
All right, sounds good.
Yeah, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not, tchmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today. tchmedia.ai is here to change the game.
I don't care what this man does to his C-suite. I don't care if he fills it all with a bunch of lesbian, pygmy, Muslim, Zoroastrians. I don't care. The cockpit worries me. DEI is necessarily opposed to quality. Necessarily. Because what DEI says is, we're going to make you use diversity, equity, and inclusion standards to deprioritize merit when you hire someone or admit someone to university or bring someone into your club. We're going to deprioritize merit because we're boosting sex or race or sexual behaviors or whatever. Some liberals have tried to argue that DEI actually accentuates quality and merit. That is logically impossible. Because the entirety of what DEI is saying there are other considerations that you should place above merit or candidate quality. DEI in restaurants means that you value diversity more than your dinner. Okay. DEI in universities means that you value diversity more than your education. No, that's not good. That's a little scary. DEI in the cockpit means that you value diversity more than your life. And I do not. I don't really like diversity as the liberals talk about it. I think it's a pretty dark thing and not conducive to anyone's flourishing. I think it's just radical leftist politics and degrading to everyone. I certainly don't like it more than I like my life. This is madness. This is actual suicide.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with the special guest co-host, Latrice Ross. This morning's discussion question, do we need DEI initiatives to get more black and women pilots? Our special guests are Brett House and Keith Enzor, both commercial airline pilots. Before I bring on Torin, who has the aviation school, Latrice, DEI specialist, I'm definitely curious to your thoughts too. That was one Michael Knowles, and he was responding to Scott Kirby's public announcement of wanting to train 5,000 new pilots by 2030, in which 50% of them he hopes will be women and people of color. That was Michael Knowles' thoughts, and he said this DEI thing is quite risky when it comes to this initiative, from his perspective. Your thoughts, Queen, before I bring on Torin.
Those statements incense me for one very important reason. They make assumptions that by leveling the playing field, that they're also downgrading the skill sets that are required for us to take part in a particular area. There's a book called Mediocre, the Dangerous Legacy of White Male Power. And most black people have reported to mediocre white men. My boss in a previous role, why it's offensive for him to tell me that I'm articulate. Someone who's serving in a VP role for a global organization, after I made a presentation, congratulated me on how articulate I was during that presentation. And when I turned around and told him that was offensive to me, he wanted to know why, because he didn't understand he was congratulating me. And I told him that his thought process when I opened my mouth was that I would not be able to articulate my thoughts effectively so that those in the meeting would be able to understand. But when I was able to articulate myself quite well, it surprised him. And that's the part that's offensive, because unconsciously you thought, oh, well, she's not going to be able to say the things that need to be said in order for her words or the meaning to be conveyed effectively to these executives. And when I did accomplish that, he thought, oh, my gosh, I must congratulate her. When I explained it to him, he goes, oh, I see. But I report to you, you're a global vice president. And in this point, I'm a program manager. Explaining to this mediocre white man why what he said was offensive. I also had to explain to him why it was offensive to meet a group, to greet a group of black people with a story about your one black friend. So that's just in my industry. I'm certain that these gentlemen have run into those power dynamics where they may have been subordinate to someone who was mediocre to their skill set. I know many of my friends have. I think that they take the fact that they're in power to mean that they are better skilled, better qualified, and that we, therefore, don't have the cognitive abilities to be in those roles and positions. But what they fail to understand is that many of us were raised with the old adage that you have to be twice as smart, you have to work twice as hard to get half as far. So although we may be in subordinate roles, we are more than qualified to be in those rooms.
You speak so well, Latrice.
What?
A reference to a Chris Rock joke, I believe, there. But I will say this real quick, and I want to hear Brent's thoughts. I will say that there's just a level of ignorance on the articulation compliment, if you will. And I'm just like the psychology of it. It's just being completely unaware of why that would be offensive. So personally, he was absolutely thinking he was doing a good deed. Clearly, with your background, you were able to explain why it's an issue or whatever. But the reality is that type of ignorance is prevalent because of our lack of understanding one another. And I would highlight the history of this country so that people would learn not to. And I don't know if we do a good job of alleviating that ignorance. And, just keep it up. Go ahead,
Clint. His role was head of DEI for this global company. So regardless of that, he had a responsibility.
But that changed everything. I'm confused now. I'm very confused right now. But go ahead, Brandon, if you will. Just your thoughts on anything you heard in the cut or anything Latrice had to say.
Yeah, I wanted to speak to the C-suite part of it.
Okay.
You know, specifically with the company that I'm at, I have heard – people who have not been in the military comment that our management side is typically a bunch of military guys. And then when you look at the military, and we have 2.6% black pilots in the military, about the same at United. It's not over 3%. And industry-wide, that's about the same number, just under 3%. But if you're getting your rising leaders in large part from the military, you have a low pool of guys coming out of there as well, so they're not matriculating up the chain into the C-suite area. So we have to start thinking about that through a large pool of pilots. A significant proportion of pilots each year come from the military. In the military, in your experience as a pilot, you probably spend, towards the end of your career, you're spending 60% of the time flying, and 60% of the time in the office, 40% of the time flying. You fly less and less the longer you're in there. You're in more management roles. So that stuff is attractive to us when we come to the airlines. Hey, maybe I could go to the management side and do that kind of thing. I've had that experience before. Most civilian guys also – civilians, low percentage of black pilots, they don't, all they want to do is fly. I mean, they dreamt their whole life, they put everything into it and kind of shun that experience. I don't know if Keith has recognized that as well, but I definitely recognize it in my company. But the point is, there's a small pool of candidates that are willing to and have the experience of going into management. From the pilot side when you go into a commercial company. So that takes effort to develop that talent, but it also means we need more people. The military, we'd like for them to have more candidates coming into the Air Force, because we know they matriculate into the aviation community. As far as pilots, I say again, you know, he talked about the safety of it, the quality of pilot. Every pilot that gets any certificate before he even puts in a application for an airline is approved by an FAA examiner, not a United examiner, not a Southwest examiner, an FAA examiner who I don't know the demographics of it, but I've never had a white one. I mean, a black one or a female. So that is the first wall you got to go through. Then you get with the company, and the training that you get with the company. They're putting you through training. We have a pretty diverse training pool, training instructor pool at United. So. But it is a quality training staff, and everybody goes through that same training staff.
That makes sense. Let me jump in here real quick, yeah. Brett, if you will, so I can get on torn on real quick, yeah, as well. But I'm just listening, and this thing that popped in my head when you say for the FAA guys, you have only had, I guess, white men, if you will, never had a woman. You know, obviously that's your relative. The relative experience, if you will, but just based on the numbers throughout the industry, I'm not surprised by that. So it's almost like even with the DEI, hey, the person that got to approve you still got to make sure you're good enough. And in this case, it's still predominantly the same people that may be having an issue with it. I'm just kind of throwing that out, that at the end of the day, if somebody passes FAA, that's all that's needed. Let me jump Torn in real quick. We got about a minute and a half before break. Torn, sorry to get you on with such a short time to the next break, but we'll keep you on past the break. But if you will, Torn, just let anyone listening know about the aviation school and why you have it, because I'm pretty sure it's to combat this issue even before DEI initiatives have become the talk of the day. But thank you for being on real quick, Torn. Thanks for being on with us, Torn.
Appreciate it, Montoya. Thank you. So I'm Torin Colin. I'm a first officer with United Airlines, and I help run a flight school out of Fulton County Airport called Aviation Career Enrichment. I am the assistant chief pilot over there, and so what our main goal is getting young minorities into the field of aviation, getting them into flying, maintenance, anything exposed into the industry, and giving them that chance to kind of see, you know, something besides, you know, maybe playing video games, being in basketball, being in anything that, you know, just a generic, hey, black people only do this. So getting these young kids, we get them in at the age of 8, and then they work their way up through the program and go all the way up to 18 years old. By having this program, which I was also a part of when I was a kid, we get products like myself. We get products like individuals that, you know, fly at United. We have graduates at Delta, Air Force Academy, you name it. They're all in every field of aviation. So By starting these kids young and at an age where, hey, if you can mold that individual, you're able to shape their understanding of, hey, you're more than just that basketball player. You're more than just, you know, an actor or an entertainer. You can be more than that. You know, it can go a long way. So that being said, I'm listening to everybody talk on the podcast so far and on the radio. One thing that I think, especially with this whole DEI stuff,
hey, let me
do
this real quick.
You know,
let's get that thought out. You got a second? Can you stay on? I'm gonna get that thought coming out of the break. Is that good?
Okay. Yeah. That's
right, cool.
Good. That's good.
All right. Cool. All right. Just wanted to make sure I could keep you on. All right. We'll be right back. You're listening
to. Appreciate
you
having me as well.
Oh no, absolutely, no problem, brother. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. LNG Technology Services, we are your industry leader in aircraft and heavy equipment repair services. In commercial business for over 15 years, LNG technicians have over 150 years of equipment-specific knowledge and are known industry-wide for returning worn-out, broken, and overused ground support equipment back to the user in working better than new conditions. For a service job done right at a value unparalleled in the industry, contact LNG Technology Services at 478-781-4860. Again, for a service job done right, that number is 478-781-4860. LNG Technologies is a Mental Dialogue Gold member and proud sponsor of the Mental Dialogue community.
I will never get on another United Airlines flight ever. Can you imagine the flight attendants now going, hey, everybody put on your seatbelt, even though I don't know how to use it. Like, what are we talking about?
Why, how correct Vinny is.
I would be terrified if I got onto a plane and I saw a woman flying the plane. And I know that we have the United CEO saying that he just wants to fulfill a quota.
That's why I think this United story and the DEI story hits so hard. If I see a black pilot, I'm going to be like, boy, I hope he's qualified.
The reality the left has
but
created.
I'm not exaggerating when I say this. If you're a member of a minority group, any minority group, these people do not like you. In fact, they hate you. Even when the conservative pundits that are propped up nationally are members of minority groups, they still hate you. And this is regardless of political affiliation. I don't give a damn what you believe. All I care about is the fact that these people have to lie to you, and they know that they have to lie to you. Let's look at this whole pilot situation. The right would have you believe that these corporations are becoming so obsessed with DEI that they're tanking their standards and resorting to just pulling a random motherfucker off the street and putting him in a cockpit because he's black. A fucking wheel fell off of a plane while it was taxiing, and randomly, Donald Trump Jr. decided to blame DEI for it. Now, judging based off the voices of the pilots in this video,
and the numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics that shows that about 92% of pilot flights and flight engineers are white,
it don't sound like no black people are in that cockpit, nor are there women in that cockpit. Y'all remember when that door blew off the side of that Alaskan Airlines flight? Elon Musk had this to say.
You responded to a post claiming that the average HBCU grad was less intelligent than the average airline pilot and stated that it will take an airplane crashing and killing hundreds of people for them to change this crazy policy of DIE. I don't know if you did you misspell it on purpose. Do you believe that women and minority pilots are inherently less intelligent and less skilled than white male pilots?
No, I'm just saying that we should not lower the standards for that.
Okay.
But I just want to tell you that pilot that you talked about, in fact, was
a woman pilot, landed the plane safely.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Latrice Ross. This morning's discussion question, do we need DEI initiatives to get more blacks and women pilots? Our special guest, Brent House, as well as Keith Enso, are both commercial airline pilots. We also have Torn with his own aviation school on the line. I wanted to let that brother finish his thoughts as we hear Elon Musk, Candace Owens give their thoughts in reference to this new DEI initiative. But Torin, I think you had some thoughts that you wanted to say before the break, so go ahead with it, brother.
Yeah. So, I mean, my biggest thing with the noise, I would like to say with, the Elon Musk, the Candace Owens, all of them, you know, it's intentional, right? It's a systematic oppression that's, you know, obviously not clearly supposed to be said, hey, this is systematic oppression. But when you sit here and tell a black pilot, right, a female pilot, hey, you're getting this help because of this program, then you go and you walk into you walk up to a gate. You know, you had that question in the back of your mind. Hey, are people sitting there and looking at you and wondering, hey, is this guy safe? Is he just as qualified, you know, as a white male pilot or whatever, right? And so that's that issue that comes with this whole DEI stuff, and I think that that's their biggest thing. It's just a scare tactic. It's just that, hey, you know, make them uncomfortable to where they don't feel comfortable being in a cockpit unless it's, you know, two white males, right? But, you know, being an airline pilot, I have to say, you know, every time I'm flying, I'm just as qualified as, you know, a white male pilot. I'm just as qualified as a female pilot. I'm qualified, you know, because we're all sitting in that cockpit. We've all taken the same tests. We've all gone through the same check rides to sit in that cockpit. So, you know, does it affect personally me, you know, being a black male pilot? No, just because I would say I have that confidence level that, you know, no, not really. But does it affect me on the way of how people might judge me and just, you know, looking at me as I walk up to a gate? Potentially, you know, I'm 27 years old. I'm a younger, I'm a younger pilot. So that alone, when I was started flying at 22 years old, I was getting looked at, oh, my God, are you old enough to fly the plane? And this was, you know, 5 years ago before this whole DEI stuff and all that good stuff. But now with this whole DEI stuff popping up, now it's, oh, okay, this is a young black pilot. This must be one of the ones that got in with this program, you know. So it's intentional, but, you know, that doesn't stop us from, you know, being great and obviously excelling in everything we do.
No, I love it, man. Thank you for your call in this morning. If you will, I'm going to let you go for now, but you can come off the one and back on the one if you ever want to jump back into the conversation and add any thing to it. What I appreciate the most about what you just said, Torin, was, again, your confidence was such that you're not concerned with those judgments, if you will, and that's what I hope anyone listening that's wanting to get into this field, that's the one thing they take away from this. Again, I don't care, in a sense, which side of this quote-unquote DEI initiative that you're on. Again, we're open to all of the conversations, whether you think it's fair or not. And obviously, you're hearing all of these pilots say at the end of the day, there are no lowering of the standards. That's the thing that I think people do need to hear because of the quote-unquote, I like your word, Torin, noise that's out there. So thank you for your wonderful 3 cents. If you will, before we let you go, how can people get involved in your school? Again, you can come back on the show if you need to. Just come off the one and back on if you want to make opinions later in the show. But before we let you go, how does someone get their youth involved in your school? Because it sounds like I've been doing this for a number of years. So I appreciate you for coming on and letting people know about this opportunity.
Yes, if anybody wants to get involved, the organization is called Aviation Career Enrichment, ACE. It's out of Fulton County Airport, Charlie Brown Airport, as some people know it. There's a online website, flyace.org, 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 and you can get your kid involved at the age of 8 years old all the way up to 18. We have different programs. We do solo events all the time. Once your kid is 16, you're able to get them to solo by themselves in their aircraft. So, that's how you can get involved. We have different volunteer events if you just want to come check us out one day. Once again, it's Aviation Career Enrichment, flyace.org. We're at Charlie Brown Airport, and you can stop by anytime. We have classes going on every single Saturday morning. So thank you.
No, I love it. Real quick before we let you go, Latrice, anything you wanted to ask Torin before we let him go? Just wanted to make sure I check with you, Queen, because I know you got a friend that's, you know, her son is flying and everything. So just want to make sure I let you ask something before we let him go.
I actually think that he's a part of the ACE program that he mentioned. I know he does Saturday classes out in Fulton County near Charlie Brown Airport. So I think that's the program that he's already a part of.
Nice. Okay, just wanted to check. All right, again, Torin, just come off the one when I let you go, and if you decide to come back in, just get back in the queue, and we'll let you give some opinions as well. But thank you for giving that information, because that's the more important thing is let's continue to put the resources and get the information and encourage more of our youth like y'all are already doing. Like you said, we can do much more than, you know, shoot a wicked jump shot and rap, right? And so I'm glad to have you in your position and sharing that information with the youth. So thank you for coming on, brother.
Most definitely. Y'all take it easy. Appreciate you having me on, man.
No, absolutely. One thing I wanted to highlight, we got another caller I'm going to jump to as well. I just see another caller jumping in the queue. But one thing I would like to highlight just in hearing Elon Musk, obviously, I think he's still the richest man in the world or second. I don't forget Bezos and Musk go back and forth on who's the richest man in the world. And so just that concept of being the richest man in the world and having an opinion kind of has, unfortunately, a huge influence. And so in hearing him respond to a Don Lemon, and for those that don't know, this Don Lemon was supposed to start a new show. And because of those questions, at least that's how it's perceived, he's no longer getting the show. At least that's how it's perceived. I don't know the actual reason why Don's not getting the show on, it was called X or on X or whatever, something that Elon Musk has control over. But I just wanted to highlight there's some intentional deception going on when you're shooting down DEI with false information. And Don pointed out that Elon has said, hey, the average HBCU grad is not as smart as a pilot. Like, most graduates in the country are not as smart as pilots. If you understand what pilot requirements take to be able to handle one of those planes, and prior to what Keith highlighted on the show, that now they've even gotten away from the college degree. But if you will, at one point you had to have the degree. That was just a minimum basic, and then you would go into flight training, which is difficult as hell, and a lot of people wash out, if you will. Average college grad, regardless, in my opinion, is not smart as the average pilot. So it's really just misinformation to kind of highlight, quote unquote, HBCU grads. But coming from an Elon Musk, it's going to be taken as, yeah, look what he said. And they go to the extreme until 100 people die, because we don't want to lower the standards. That is absolutely not happening. So I just wanted to point it out that was kind of ridiculous, using the HBCU, average HBCU grad compared to a pilot. Let's go to the next caller. 706, last 3033. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion.
Hey, good morning. This is Mike Hojo calling from Lookup Flight Academy, Atlanta, Georgia.
Hey, what's up? We got another pilot on the air. What's up with you, Mike? Glad to have you on. What you got for us, brother? Please jump in on this with us.
Yeah, I've been paying attention to the conversation. Good talks. I think my opinion is that we're overthinking it. And I think that's what happens when you always approach things from the political side. Like with DEI, for example, it's a major political thing. And I heard some caller earlier talk about how it's basically on a downturn the last couple of years. And being that we're in this field, we're actually in the business of training pilots. You know, we're on the back end, we're dealing with this stuff day to day. When we're focusing on black and brown, we know that economically there's a challenge there. And normally DEI would be a good place to start to help some of these kids get funding, because, you know, pilot training is not cheap. But then this idea that, well, sorry, that's my kid in the background.
No, you're
this
fine. Idea no, we love, that, we're a family show. We love having the kids on the show. You good, King? You
okay,
good.
I'm on daddy duty this morning. But this idea that, you know, because, oh, if I get trained through DEI or any other program that's meant to help more inclusion, then – you know, people are going to look at me different. Like, who cares? You know, that's just my approach with it. Is like, I think that we're overthinking it that way. Where if you got to get somewhere, just get to it. You know, if there's resources available, just get to it. You know, people will say what they want to say. I've been in this field 10 years, and I've been looked at differently. And also the flip side, I've been praised on one hand, but also looked at differently the other hand. So my opinion is just take advantage of whatever resources are available. The fact is we need the resource, right? Economically, black and brown does need that resource. And there's a need for more black and brown in the cockpit. And some one last thing I want to say, you mentioned earlier with Elon Musk comments. My personal opinion, I don't think you have to be friggin' Einstein to fly an airplane. It doesn't take grade I don't know how you want to grade it, but I think the most important thing when it comes to pilotage is attention. I think if you know the basics, you know, and you're disciplined and you pay attention, that's it. And that, when we go into schools and talk to kids, that's another wall we're trying to break down, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you I don't want you to look at pilotage as that thing over there for those smart people.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is anyone can become a pilot if you commit yourself and commit the time and your attention to it. So that's all I got for you.
Now, great 3 cents. We are at the top of the hour. I got Brother Pianchi wanting to get in on this thing.
Smitty, can we ask him how much an hour of flight time costs with an instructor?
Sure.
Yes.
Mike, that's for you, brother.
So,
we go to break. Yeah,
You're looking at between $230 and $260 an hour for the aircraft rental and instruction on average.
Yeah, cost prohibitive is more of the issue. I think that's what I keep hearing from each of you. Great question, Brett. And so that's the consideration, not lowering of standards as being perceived in the political realm of this thing. And I agree with you, Mike, 100%, regardless of somebody how it looks at you. Torrin talked about that as well. He's been flying since he was 22. And he, again, keeping it a buck and keeping it, just putting it in perspective, he received more issues of when he was flying at 22 than the fact that he's black. But obviously, he's saying now that DEI is coming up, that stuff is starting to bubble up. But, like, to your point, he doesn't care about those things, and I agree with that. So we're at the top of the hour. Thank you for your 3 cents this morning. We'll let you get back to daddy duties. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask.
Babe, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes, and I love the message on it, too. You are the hustle, huh?
That's what the shirt says. I am the hustle. They embody the entrepreneurial spirit, and what I like the most, it's more than a brand, it's a lifestyle for those who want to put in the work and expect to have the finer things in life. I also follow them on Instagram. Check this post out.
If you believe money is the root of all evil, you're using it wrong?
Or how about this one? Excuses made $0 an hour.
I like those. What's their IG?
At moneymotivation.co.
But do they have any ladies' gear?
Yes, you're going to love the clothing line they got for the ladies. Matter of fact, pull up their website, moneymotivation.com, and I'm going to get you a few things so we can both look like money. Everywhere I go, and everywhere I be, I don't even talk, they still know it's me. Because I look like money, smell like money, talk like money, even walk like money.
You have committed that 50% of the class, of the classes will be women or people of color.
How that's going to work out without cutting quality, I do not know.
He said classes in the clip. The CEO was saying that the company wants 50% of its Flight Academy classes to be women or people of color. Please read this article. Flight Academy students are at the start of their careers, years away from being hired as pilots for any major airline. But these people, who are either dumb as fuck in some cases or are lying to you in other cases on purpose, have tricked people into believing that he meant 50% of the hires are going to be minorities or women. Different companies and flight academies can pair with colleges and universities in order to encourage people to go through the process to get the degrees and requirements necessary to become a pilot. Because no matter how many minorities or women these people want to hire as pilots, you still typically need a degree from a field like transportation, engineering, business, or something adjacent. If you don't need a degree, you still need to complete flight training with FAA-certified flight instructors. You may end up having to do a 2 to 4 year aviation degree, which can include several weeks of ground school and flight training, various types of trainings for specific aircraft, practice and training executing certain maneuvers, because shocker, nothing about DEI doesn't mean you still need to have all of those requirements before they will hire your ass.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Latrice Ross. This morning's discussion question, do we need DEI initiatives to get more black and women pilots? As you hear, Jay Williams, J8, that's his handle on IG, giving his perspective to all of this DEI stuff, kind of reiterating what our special guests both have said, Keith and Brent. We got Brother Pianchi wanting to jump in, so let's get to the caller, and then we'll get back to our special guest and walk through this conversation. Hey, Brother Pianchi, thanks for calling in. What you got for us, brother?
I see you got Brent. Brent's been hiding. I don't know where, I guess he's working hard. But anyway, you know, When I learned how to fly, it was yeah, 40 hours of ground school, 40 hours of wet. That means flying the plane. And it costs $40 an hour. But now it's making $200. But no, these programs existed for a long time, Montoya. You know, out in Oakland, you got Oakland Youth First. You got American Airlines. And there in Atlanta, you got Tuskegee. The Tuskegee Airmen offer a scholarship that was around, I know, at least $70,000 a year for the course. So that there provides the resources and, you know, it's practically free. But, no, I would myself be against any of these initiatives that people claim to be, because I think that you just don't want to sacrifice on the quality and the ability of the person to be able to handle, in this particular case, flying an airplane, especially at the commercial level. And it's not as easy as they say. Affirmative action don't give people anything. It just opens the door, offers people the opportunity to get involved. And a lot of misconceptions have been put out there that just don't exist. If you don't have the quality to do it, it would tell on you, and usually people drop out. It's just not that easy. So I just wanted to add that. But for $230 an hour, man, I need to get back into another profession.
Hey, you need to be able to charge that, huh?
Absolutely.
I know the businessman that you are, but thank you for your 3 cents, Brother Piyaki. Absolutely. Let's continue this conversation with our special guest. If y'all want to join the show, anybody listening online, the number is 646-787-1691. Again, 646-787-1691. Latrice, I'm going to ask you this question because obviously we've clarified pretty much everybody that's got on or the cuts that we've been playing has clarified there are no standards being lowered despite what's being put out politically. Do you see that even the concept of quote-unquote pushing DEI at a time like this, can you see backlash in a manner, if you will, in a manner that can be harmful to the camaraderie of any of these organizations, or can there be enough backlash to, harking back to Brant's example of the young lady saying, hey, put in my proxy vote. Like, I can't be there, but somebody put my vote in. Like, that's how far she wanted to go, if you will. So can that ever be disruptive, in your opinion, from your experience as a DEI expert consultant? Can it be disruptive to that point? Because I want to talk about some stuff that happened at the Academy when we were all there in reference to this same thing. But just wondering on a professional level, have you seen it be disruptive to that degree? And, you know, just from your perspective.
It's typically disruptive because it's disrupting the status quo. And so our brains don't like change. And oftentimes, unconsciously, people feel that it's a zero-sum game, that if you are given that opportunity, that means that the opportunity is being taken away from me. And that is absolutely not the case. The only thing that leveling the playing field does, it means that there are perhaps others that you have to compete against. But and that might impact our the white male mediocrity that we see in so many leaders. I mean, I've heard Elon Musk classified as a genius, but when you listen to the man and when you do the research, he's anything but a genius. He just happens to be born into wealth, and he's white. So, you know, we've been conditioned to view white male mediocrity as success. A friend of mine who's no longer with us, we were at an accountability group meeting, and someone was preparing for an interview. And her advice to this person was to go into that interview with the confidence of a white mediocre man. and when we, that's what we see. And so we, stop making me laugh, Michael. But that's the disruption. That's the disruption. I'm trying to be serious.
I know, that's funny. I like it. That's funny. Hey, you know me. I'll laugh at anything. That's funny. Sorry to interrupt you. You interrupt your train of thought, but that's funny. Go ahead, Queen. If you can finish your thought or put it back together,
okay,
I want to share this. Yeah, go ahead and finish your thought, Queen. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so the disruption is that the statement I made about zero, it's a zero-sum game. I've had white VPs come into my office and say, what about us white people when we start a black ERG? When I look at the executive board and the executive team in that company, and there were perhaps three people of color, and when I say people of color, I mean brown people, not black. There was one woman who they gave the role, and she was mediocre, and they gave her no support. They gave her no training. Another thing that's important to understand is that when a black CEO is placed in a role, white men stop collaborating. Their performance decreases. And they've learned that they feel that they no longer see themselves represented in leadership. So how about that for disruptor?
Oh wow! That's a perfect transition. I want to see if Brant and Keith remember this. So we're class of '97 at the academy, and I'm pretty sure there's been quote unquote smarter classes brought in, but at the time we were told we were the smartest class ever brought into the academy based on their how they measure the classes based on SAT scores and GPAs and whatever else that goes into how they select their freshman class, if you will. So I'm pretty sure Keith and Brant remember at least that part. But there were two times where our entire class was called to task, if you will, by the academy. The entire class was called a task. So being the smartest class brought in after the first semester, a lot of us failed chemistry, myself included, and a couple other classes or whatever. And so we ended up having one of the largest attrition rates they had seen in years. And so at the end of that, coming out of the Christmas break or whatever, they called the entire class together. It was like highlighting, y'all are the smartest class we ever brought in. What the hell is going on with y'all? Because so many of us had failed out. And so we were going through the academy at the time where DEI was being pushed kind of throughout the country. And so we would always have these conversations about DEI. I don't know if we called it DEI at the time, but it was just obviously diversity was being, and we have all these conversations about affirmative action. And I remember to some of the Mike's point and Torrance's point about people having this stigma on you. I remember having a lot of conversations with classmates about them being against affirmative action and quotas and things of this nature. And I remember one of my comebacks I would always say was, hey, this was the smartest class we brought in here. I had to go to the prep school a year before. And so for peers that might look at me as, well, you know, were you a quota? Did you earn it? That type of thing. I was like, well, some people got directly in, meaning they had higher scores than me, and they're not here today. So what do you have to say to that? Because no matter what quote-unquote standard you're using for education-wise, you're not going to be able to, in a sense, factor in somebody's will. So I don't know if Brant and Keith remember us getting called a task on that. And then the second time we got called, it wasn't even our class getting called a task. There was, to Latrice's point, our Brigadier General, our freshman year, was like maybe the first black Brigadier General to run the base, if you will, to run the academy. I think he was the first one or the first one in a long time. And so during all these affirmative action surveys, found out that people thought there was a lot of reverse discrimination going on in the selection of the different various staffs because the way the academy is set up, just like the Air Force. And so the students run the school, if you will, in the same format positions as you would have within the Air Force. We have them at the school. And so there was this big perceived notion of reverse discrimination, particularly because we had a black Brigadier General. And so the surveys were so bad, they called us into, I forgot what the hall is, Keith, Brant, y'all can tell me, but they called us into the hall where we all had to listen. And they was like, you know, here's what these surveys are saying. And I remember Brigadier General at the time saying, of all the selections of who's in leadership in the school, I only select three, the lead person and the two people under him. The rest of them, y'all select. And so I think at the time we had like two males, one woman, and one black person as far as the position he picks as the general of the school, if you will. And so his point back to us was, if y'all think there's reverse discrimination going on, y'all are making the selections. I haven't – he asked those that were in leaders. He kind of pointed out, for those that have been in leadership positions, whether they were running basic training, whether they were – because all these different opportunities to be in leadership. And he says, for all of y'all that have been in those positions, have y'all ever once been called in my office and told to change your staff? And so it was just a perception because and part of it, you know, to be fair to that perception, one of our basic trainings was being ran by a lot of African Americans based on who they basically picked their peers, and the basic trainings were run incredible. To be honest, they were highlighting how some of the best basic trainings we had ever had. And I remember the guys who were running those basic trainings. And so it was widely understood that those basic trainings, even though they had, in a sense, a black student running them, were some of the best the school had ever had. So it was being recognized in that sense. But there was a perception of reverse discrimination. I'll run to Keith and Brant, both of y'all. Do y'all remember that? But I specifically remember that being called, and the bigger the general had to say, change none of your staff. So why do y'all think there's a quote-unquote reverse discrimination going on? I don't know if y'all remember that moment, but either one of y'all can jump in and give us y'all thoughts on it, if you will, because I think that applies to even any DI conversation, no matter where it's happening.
Hey, I'll jump in on that one, Montoya, if that's all right. Number one, chemistry, yeah, it almost got me too, man.
It definitely got me.
I think I got like a C- in that one. That was one to skate through. Woo, that was a wake-up call, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Almost got me kicked out the school.
I do. Yeah, exactly. I was like, woo, holding on by the skin of your teeth, right? Hey, the reverse discrimination perception, I do remember that. And it's actually, if you don't mind, I want to tie that back into something that way back when Latrice was saying about her, I'm putting air quotes up again, oh, you're so articulate, quote. I just had to start laughing at that. And then also the white male mediocrity. You pretend like you're a white male involved or fully up on the mediocrity side and just walk into a room like that. That's actually been used in my family a few times. Well, my wife says, hey, man, I need you to go do this for me. I said, oh, yes, ma'am. She said, remember, you're a white male and you're average. You got this. Oh, Lord. So what I did want to say is a lot of people are the reverse discrimination perception that you were talking about that Brigadier General had, specifically on the Caucasian side, a lot of people are unaware of the underlying currents that they've been raised with. And it takes a lot of introspection and stuff like and just a lot of talk to yourself to understand what's going on. And like your boy Torn was saying, there's a whole bunch of noise out there as far as flying is concerned. And there's tests at every point. I don't know, every 3 weeks, every 6 weeks, you got to pass a check ride. You got to get a oral evaluation and stuff like that. So there's no question that the quality of pilots is there. Everything else is just noise. That's just people adding stupid stuff to it. I think the problem will be, the issue may be in the, when you get into the flight deck. And I wanted to pull something out from my experience. I moved down here to Atlanta maybe 10, 11 years ago, and I was flying as the FO. And I remember one discussion in particular, right now I live in the suburbs, but we have kind of friends all over the city. I was, like, going to see one of my friends after flight, and the captain in the cockpit was like, oh, why are you going up there, man? I thought, I got some people there. And he said, are you sure? That, you know, that's the dark side of town. And that's – I'm going to throw some air quotes up, like, but – and I quickly intervened there. I said, well, what exactly do you mean by that? And then he proceeded to explain it, and I had to tell him, man, that's not right. I said, listen, you're in Atlanta. It's the way things work. It's the way things work everywhere. You don't know who you're going to see or what part of town is this and that. I said, have you ever been there? And he said, no. I said, well, next time you get the chance, go up there, and we'll see how it is. But I wanted to use that to highlight a lot of people are, a lot of the 90% of us or 85% of us are unaware of the underlying currents that we grow up with.
Mm-hmm.
And I use that as an example to say,
right,
sometimes you got to point it out. Just like Latrice said, hey, do you know what you just told me was offensive? And it's a boots on the ground type of strategy as far as this stuff is concerned. But I think that is the big barrier, and that's the perception that the Brigadier mm-hmm. General had. You know, we all filling out surveys. Oh, I perceive reverse discrimination just because I feel it. Oh, bro, you didn't do what you wanted to do. You didn't get the position you wanted to get, so you're going to say, oh, it was reverse discrimination. Or, you know, I don't mm-hmm. know. It's just kind of a tough thing.
No. You're making strong points because at the end of the day, without the interaction is how, for example, using some of this concept of DEI being politicized and even the idea of even having to talk about standards and, you know, a Candace Owens saying, I'll be afraid if a woman's flying a plane, like those type of things. With ignorance, you can actually buy into the thought and hear it legitimately, right? You can hear Elon say, hey, the average HBCU grad is not as smart as a pilot, and actually take it as is. But to your point, due to not having enough interaction or background to be able to dismiss it, you just receive it possibly because of your own lack of interaction. And this is calling it like it is. And so it's why you could perceive, as you, to your point, perceive reverse discrimination, even though there's nothing that factually says such, and even suggested in an industry that's 85 or 90% one way, you're still super concerned, and it's all perception. It's not reality. So thank you for all of those thoughts. Brent, your thoughts on anything you're hearing?
Well, the first thing is, you know, when Keith told that captain, you know, he got people up there, he should have known Keith got some flavor in it, because black people are the only people to say they got, yeah, my people up there white. You know what I'm saying? And the I do remember the academy stuff. The thought, you know, I didn't pay attention to none of that because I was grinding. And I want to take this back to the flying piece. And one of the instructors, I can't remember if it was Torin or the other one, said, you know, it ain't about the grade. When you're trying to fly, man, it's about the grit. You know, you don't. You could be the smartest person there is, and that's what we dealt a lot with at the Air Force Academy, is they had lowered their quality on who they were recruiting, as in the whole person. They said, we just want salutatorians and valedictorians and not people who were necessarily leaders in community, playing sports at the top of everything that they participated in. We just got these really smart kids who had never been hit in the face in a boxing class. And once they took a boxing class at the Air Force Academy, their whole world turned upside down. You know what I mean? And so the one thing I love about the aviation profession, man, is people are not there that don't want to be there. People who successfully, people who complete pilot training in any form, whether it's Keith and I went through pilot training right after the Air Force Academy together. So, and a lot of our brothers were in there together training. That's one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life, man. And if you can get through a year of that in the military, if you can get through what might be 2, 3, 4 years of the civilian side of training to get to all your certificates that you need to be to become a pilot, you want to be there, man. And whether you're the smartest person or not, you're going to put in the work to get it done. And the people who don't want to be there and the people who can't fly, they're not going to be qualified, man. And that's the whole thing about this, the quality, the talent. There is a spectrum of great pilots to some not so good, just like there are lawyers, doctors, all of that. But the reason I love the profession is when I'm sitting next to a dude, I know he wants to be there for the most to get that job that he got. He wants to be there.
No, I respect that. And yeah, that's, and I hope again, I just hope we've again clarified the noise is out there. But in a sense of this being a DEI discussion, I got to keep some of that going just to add context and perspective. Cause I even recall, I forgot what the officer that runs our actual squadrons, if you will, the, whatever their position was, but I had a brother who ran the squadron. I remember AOC. Him talking. He had an AOC position or whatever. And so Air Officer Commander, right. And so I remember having being fortunate enough while at the academy being, you know, one of the few squadrons that had a black AOC. Again, numbers are what they are. But I was fortunate. But I remember him having been a pilot talking to some of the other people that aspired to be pilots. I never wanted no parts of it. But I always remember a conversation in reference to some of this interaction and these perceived fears and things that we were just talking about with Keith. But I remember him highlighting some of the difficulty of why even in the Air Force, you know, the pilots at 2.6%, it was like 2.3 or 2.0 back then or whatever. So I guess it's crept up a little bit, not even a full percentage, if you will. But whatever it was at the time, I remember him highlighting that some aspect that he was recommending to some of you that wanted to be pilots. I don't know if you were a part of that conversation or not, Brent, but I just remember him saying, hey, at the end of the day, there's still relationships that have to be made that can assist you even in the difficulty of pilot training. And he says, can you imagine a guy having to grade a guy who maybe doesn't have the best ride and he kind of have to downgrade him, if you will, but the guy's a great guy. The trainer was out at the bar with them, you know, for the last so many weeks at the school or whatever. And so there's a concept of saying, hey, I need to give this guy a chance per se. To y'all point, they still have to end up meeting the standard at one point. But in a sense, they maybe not downgrading them as much in order for them not to wash out of the school via not meeting the standard. Like that opportunity could be given. And so the brother was pointing us out saying, as much as you may not like going to the bar with the guys as a, you know, as a one or two black male or black female or one, you know, it's going to be limited number of you in the flight school anyway, as much as you don't want to go out to the bar because it's just not who you like to hang out with, he said, make sure you're going to the bar for the reasons he's just said. You just want to be, quote unquote, one of the guys. It may not be natural for you based on your cup of tea or the bars you like or the, you know, in a sense, the kind of place you like, but keep that in mind. You want to be one of the guys in the event that you're not downgraded too low because that trainer actually knows you. That was just a piece of advice that he gave because he was saying that may be natural for white guys because they're predominant, may not be natural for you as the one or two black guys in flight school. So it was just something that he advised. Brent, any thoughts on that? Because, again, it's something to be aware of because it is a reality.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it's a reality that has to be considered when you are, you know, one of however many might be in flight school. Go ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and, you know, I didn't drink coming up, still don't, but that's a big part of the culture when you hanging with a group of guys. And, you know, so you do have to think about that thing. Just show up for 10 minutes. Show up for 30 minutes, you know, just show your face or whatever. And that's it, always in the back of your mind. That's why we have higher levels of higher propensity to high blood pressure, thinking about that stuff that shouldn't matter. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
And all three of us, me, you, and Keith, both know someone who, one of our very close brothers, who
mm-hmm.
went through. He was one of the best pilots in the world, and I say, and people might say that's hyperbolic. No, we're talking about he trained with the best pilots in the world, and when he on one flight, he goes on with one of our former acquaintances at the Air Force Academy as his instructor. He goes on and they have an exchange. I don't want to get into the details,
mm-hmm.
but after he stood up for himself and basically said, I'm not a part of this culture. Don't talk to me like that. The whole world came down on him and shifted his career. And you could do a case study on something like that and say, I was not a part of the culture. You know, I didn't fit in. And I can hear, even in my job now, people speaking to those kinds of things. When we talk about DEI, and that I just wanted to bring this up real quick because this is kind of that point. DEI is an HR initiative, is how I think the my pilot group looks at it. It's an HR initiative. And in that text, you might have said.
Hey, matter of fact, let me do this, Brett. Just to be, I gotta go take care of my sponsors. Let me shoot a break and let's hear that part after the break, if you will.
Okay, got it.
All right, we'll be right back, y'all. Anybody wants to jump in? 646-787-1691. You do have to press 1 if you want to speak. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. Are you looking for a deep, meaningful relationship that eventually leads to marriage, but tired of swiping left on dating apps? Tired of being ghosted and tired of online relationship coaches without relationships themselves? Well, psychotherapist Monique Knight has the recipe to help you find your perfect match, and she brings you the Secret Sauce Relationship Bootcamp. With support from trained couples counselors, marriage and family therapists, this course will empower you to build meaningful relationships. This 8-week bootcamp offers a structured journey for singles to meet and interact as our team of experts guides you through topics like effective communication, conflict management, and intimacy. Registration is now open for the second boot camp after the first one sold out in less than 2 weeks. The next boot camp starts on April 1st. Register at comprehensivefamilycare.org/SSB or call 404-585-7533. Again, that is 404-585-7533 for details. Remember, love is not just a matter of chance, it's a skill that can be developed.
Welcome back to the Now Tampa Bay, a woman breaking barriers in the skies.
The Now's Mark Stewart introduces us to a Denver woman, the first African-American female airline captain for a major carrier.
I'm really quite partial to the West Coast. The views are gorgeous. The weather's almost always good.
United pilot Melissa Ward is a force.
I love flying in the U.S.
On the ground and in the sky.
I'm an A320 captain, so we fly mostly domestic and then Mexico and Canada.
Ward is the first female African-American airline captain for a major carrier and hopes generations of young women will follow her flight path at a time when the industry faces a pilot shortage.
Every now and then you'll see some little girl come up to you and or their parents will be walking by and say, look, she's a pilot. So that kind of makes me proud.
Her confidence in the cockpit comes in part from her mother.
My mom was the first black woman to graduate from the University of Chicago Medical School. When you see a mom can accomplish something like that, you think, I can do anything.
She was also part of a championship basketball team at USC.
You kind of get used to winning, and then you really feel like, hey, I'm going to win at everything I do.
Ward was in the ROTC while in college. After a flight as a student, she was hooked and started to break barriers.
When you put on a flight suit, they're like, why are you in that flight suit? And I'm like, well, I'm going to pilot training here. And they're like, we've never seen a black woman pilot here.
Perseverance is one of her pillars, eventually getting hired at United.
Anytime a woman works in a predominantly male career field, I think it's challenging because you want to fit in and be accepting and you want to be one of the guys, but you don't want to lose yourself in the process.
Captain Ward's life is about balance. She's a mother and wants the next generation to know what's possible.
It's about giving kids an opportunity to see every type of opportunity that's out there for them and take the one that fits best.
Clear for takeoff.
A pilot in the sky, breaking the glass ceiling and touching the clouds.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. For any of you singles out there, definitely jump into the Secret Sauce Boot Camp. Thanks to our sponsor, Comprehensive Family Care, putting on that boot camp April 1st. You only got a week to jump in, so look them up. Also highlighting Melissa Ward. That's from about 7 years ago, found that cut. So I thought it was a nice highlight for this morning's discussion question. Do we need DEI initiatives to get more blacks and women pilots? Our special guests are Brent House and Keith Enzor, as well as my special guest co-host Latrice Ross, DEI consultant. Brent, you were going into some thoughts prior to the break, so sorry for breaking you up. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, the DEI, from what I can tell, is people think it's a HR initiative, and it is, that's where the executives are in that respect.
And the pilot group at companies believe they are, I shouldn't say it, it is, they feel separated from, or some might even believe elevated above the rest of the company. We have what we call professional standards. We have an issue with somebody in the cockpit that we fly with for 4 days. We don't, our first thing is not to run to HR. We go to professional standards, which is a union group who helps us work through the challenges, gives feedback to one side or the other on whatever happened in the cockpit. These are typically not safety-related things. These are relational things.
Okay.
Work when you spend, when you're in the cockpit with somebody for 4 days. So they, pilots feel like that was the text that I sent you the other day. It was someone saying, we can handle this on our own. We don't need HR's DEI program to be in our cockpit. And I just wanted to highlight what the distinction was and, mm-hmm. and why we see that in the culture.
No, actually, thanks for pointing out that context. Latrice, or
can I
either
something
one?
Here?
Yeah, geez, either one jump in. Please jump in.
So what you said about DEI being a part of HR is a problem with perception because HR should not be a part of human resources. As a matter of fact, my role, I report to the chief operating officer of the company that I work for. And in my opinion, that's where it resides. That's where it should reside. The thought or the perception that it fits into HR and that it's just an initiative is a part of why it's not accepting, because by having it poured into operations, you embed those principles into the way of working. And so they are no longer perceived as an initiative, but simply how we work. And when we can evolve DEI to becoming simply a part of how we work, then we can begin to remove some of the stigma that's associated with doing this work. To pivot just a bit, I wanted to just earlier this week, I think the 19th or so, 18th or 19th, there was a Minnesota-based pilot for Delta Airlines who was testifying before the U.S. Senate, and she introduced herself saying that she was a Delta Airlines pilot. And as soon as she finished her introduction, a senator actually immediately followed with a question for her to walk him through a typical work week in the life of a stewardess. She then had to tell him again that is my name and I'm a pilot for Delta. Then she proceeded to tell him what her work week was like as a pilot for Delta. And that happened this week. And we don't even use the term stewardess anymore or flight attendant.
Thank you. Thank you. And I wanted to say I'm glad you clarified the DEI reporting directly to operations. I don't know for sure. I haven't looked at our wiring diagram, but I think that's how it is aligned. That's why the resources have been aligned mm-hmm. to it. That's why we have in the AVA community. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about it amongst those who don't look at it deeply, like you just explained, it appears to be another HR thing that's telling us how we can communicate with one another, what we can do, and what we're going to get in trouble for. But that was a great explanation. Thank you.
So, Latrice, let me say this to you. And if you recall, we did a show after or maybe a year after the George Floyd situation and kind of doing, a report on how companies did with some of their initiatives, with all the money that was thrown at, you know, we're going to quote-unquote change and all this type of thing, and the reality of that show, and I wanted to ask you about that, about this, I think it's appropriate for this show. The reality of that show, you and the other DEI professional that we had on that show, y'all reality was a lot of the companies had not, quote-unquote, lived up to whatever they proposed. Some did it just to catch the PR and that type of thing, and not to go back to that particular show. I'm just highlighting the unfortunate reality. And I recall from that show was that a lot of DEI initiatives don't pan out in a lot of places. And I think some of that ends up being how easy it has become to put it on the chopping block under, if you will, the current times, because DEI is being chopped in a lot of places. And I know you know that to be a reality, because when it was being pushed, it was a lot of positions that people could go get. And I think that's changing, partly to Brant's point, people perceiving it in the wrong location, although, like you said, it typically reports directly to operations, but the perception of it, and even people looking back on it and say, hey, this company's had this DEI program for this, and the dent has been merely been made on people getting into upper management, even when a company has DEI. So I wanted to just kind of lay out that full context and saying, hey, what's the resolve when the reality is there are plenty of them that do not work? I will highlight that when you get a Scott Kirby voluntarily saying, here's how I'm going to run my program, is usually when you get that type of enthusiasm that you will see more success. But a lot of companies have had DEI with no success. How does that play into the context of all of this, if that makes sense?
It does, and I think that there are a couple of things at play. It's someone who's committed to this work for the right reasons, and someone who's not committed to this work for the right reasons. And I think that what we're seeing, there are companies in the world that are making these commitments because it's the right thing to do, not because it's the popular thing to do. I think that what we saw after the murder of George Floyd was that it was the popular thing to do. And there wasn't a lot of commitment behind that. They spoke the words, but they didn't follow through with the actions. And it's easy for folks without commitment, without resolve, to easily say, okay, well, you know, that was nice. Now let's move on to the next thing. And we see that happening. So he has a commitment to it, and you can tell. My bestie works for a company, for a tech company, that's also very staunchly committed to DEI. The company that I work for is committed to DEI. These companies with a true commitment, they're not likely to succumb to the whims of what's happening from a societal perspective, whereas the large majority of those companies do succumb to that. Additionally, I think that DEI practitioners have to look at how we practice this work. Oftentimes, we alienate those in power, and it's easy to do that, and I've had to adapt and adjust how I approach this work. If you recall earlier, I said unearned disadvantage. When I started doing this work, I used to talk about privilege and unearned advantage. That's a trigger for the power majority. And if I don't have the power majority untriggered, willing to listen to me, then it's easy for my initiatives, air quotes, to get shut down. But if I don't trigger them and I don't make it seem as if they are the problem, then it's easier for me to get the work done. It's easier for the work to continue. And so I think we as practitioners have to understand physiology, understand neuroscience and how our brains respond to triggers, and adjust and adapt how we approach this work. And until we do that, we're not going to be accepted.
No, that's good, great points. Just putting their context and perspective, I remember when I first got recommended to, in a sense, put the Mental Dialogue Community Club on social media, because I've always started out of barbershops and just did kind of as a hobby for a lot of years before I turned it into a business. But I remember first getting the social media, and I would have interaction with some of my prior classmates at the academy, and I remember these conversations at the academy, and having these, this, particularly on this issue in itself. I remember even being, even though I personally was never going to stay in the Air Force any longer than I had to, and my friends know that, I still remember being appreciative of the concept of the military realizing the need, if you will, to even get more African-Americans and people of color and women, for that matter, in officer rank. I didn't choose to be a pilot, topic of this show, but I remember I stayed at the academy and worked in the minority enrollment office, if you will, and there was kind of a, you know, that same concept, like, why is that needed, or looking down on the fact that people were in that position. But I respected this concept for those who did understand it, not that everybody, and there was that back, you know, that these conversations and backlash were there, but I respected that something that the military, in a sense, being one of the in a sense, the first to cross the color line way back in the late 40s, if you will, when it comes to integration, if you will. But respecting that the military, I found at the time, for all of my issues I may have had, in a sense, with the military, I did come to respect the one thing they understood about getting more minorities, if you will, into the officer rank was that a big portion of the
enlisted.
Thank you. You knew exactly where I was going. Thank you, Brent. Thank you for the enlisted was a lot of minorities. And so the military understood the benefit of having more officers that could relate from whatever context, whatever background somebody had, and how that was an improvement to the overall mission and success of the military being able to do what it needed to do. And so the military, I appreciate it, found value in trying to increase those ranks because a large part of the enlisted, we've always talked about that, we have candid conversations about, you know, in a sense, if black people were pushed into the military to be on front lines and all that kind of stuff. And there may be some validity to that historically, but I do understand and appreciate coming through the military during the purple phase of the military, which was even getting all the branches to get better at working with one another. It understood the concept of needing to have more officers who look like those in the enlisted rank. So that was something that I always appreciated. Let me go to this last break. And I'll let you respond out of the break. Is that you,
okay.
Latrice? Yep, sounds good. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not, tchmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today.
AI is here to change the game.
There's little margin for error
here. I don't see any margin at all, sir.
Permission to speak, sir.
What is it?
I made a mistake, sir. It won't happen again.
That's right, Peoples. It won't. You're out.
Colonel, I did something really stupid. I'll take any punishment you give, but please don't put me out of the program. Not now.
Son, my hands are tired.
I can't go home like this.
Home? If it was up to me, boy, you'd be going into the infantry.
Major! I got a right to fight for what I believe in like anybody else. I'm the best pilot in this damn place.
Get a grip! People!
People! Walter!
People!
Graduation day, no name called will be higher than mine. Guaranteed.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, do we need DEI initiatives to get more blacks and women pilots? Special guests, commercial airline pilots, Brent House and Keith Enzo, as well as DEI consultant, special guest co-host, Latrice Ross. As I play the cut, it's only appropriate that we're talking about getting more blacks and people of color and women into the pilot position, that we pay our ode to the Tuskegee Airmen, who obviously played a huge role in how this country, in a sense, perceived African Americans in particular, being thought they were not smart enough to fly. And I kind of shoot to the fictitious portion of the Tuskegee Airmen movie, where a character by the name of Walter Peoples, he was an aeronautical engineer, very good pilot in the movie, if you will, and it's fictitional in the sense that there is no record of any Tuskegee Airmen committing suicide in that manner. Hollywood obviously takes liberty to make a movie more effective, but the thing that I wanted to highlight in that cut real briefly, I know Latrice had something you wanted to say, but I just wanted to highlight this context real quick. At the very beginning, one of the other Tuskegee Airmen says, hey, the officer comes in, the black officer comes in and tells Peoples, hey, little room for error. And another one points out there was no room, it appears. And him being the smartest, expecting to be the number one in the class, could not take the idea of not making it through flight school and what people back home would think. And he ended up committing suicide. Obviously, very dramatic, not real life events, if you will. However, there is context that I think, and I hope to see what Brett and Keith as well think about this, but I think we have to put in context and remember what, ancestors have done for us to have the opportunity, as you said, Brent, to keep your head down, not pay attention to the noise out there, and be successful in this career field that can be extremely rewarding. And we also, in a sense, have to be careful to, in a sense, not bring the history forward and still tell our youth, you have to be twice as good. That is actually a detriment to put on our black children in current times, when the reality is, as you said, people just want to be there. It's difficult to get through, or it can be, and you just have to want to do it. And so if you apply yourself, you can win. And we have to, in a sense, appreciate our ancestors, but not carry old sentiments that don't serve our youth getting into your field. So if you could kind of respond to that, and then I'll get back to you, Latrice. Sorry about that. I just wanted to really set that, why I played that cut. Brent, any thoughts on what I just said?
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking about pilot training and how difficult it was and challenging for me, and I was probably closer to being expelled than graduating at some point, but made it through. And then I look, and that's it. You know, everybody achieves at a different level. And so sometimes you might get people that you're coming across, whether it's teachers in the classroom, teachers, instructors on the flight line, that just don't have the patience for, you know, someone who might not learn or pick up as quickly on things. But then later on, I find myself as an instructor and evaluator and things like it takes time, man. And I think those are things that are in the back of your mind all the time. Am I in the right place? And when you know you are, you're going to do whatever it takes to be successful.
Yeah, you are like you said, to think to barely be, you know, passing, as you said, barely even thinking about washing out, to now being an instructor. And you also are honored in the military because you actually saved some lives during the Gulf War as a Gulf War veteran. So really highlight that part of your career. I just wanted to at least point that out, considering that, like you said, at one point you were on the verge of possibly washing out, is what, because the term that y'all use for a pilot training. So I just wanted to highlight, not only did you not wash out, but you are now honored as a veteran for having saved some lives during the Gulf War. So
hey,
definitely highlight that. Go ahead, brother.
Thanks for that. And I'll also point out to people, you brought up Tuskegee Airmen. That is one of the most celebrated DEI programs we will ever know about. So as far as that goes, you know, why would anybody challenge DEI?
Dope. That's a dope concept. Latrice, I'm sorry to cut you off a few seconds ago, so jump back in where you want to, Queen.
So there was something like when you were talking about the importance of having that diversity in the military, that they recognized that before a lot of corporations did. And I wanted to highlight something that we don't often think about. Women, petite women, typically die more. They're more likely to die or be seriously injured in a car accident than an average-sized woman or a man. And this is because when engineers were in the room drawing up the concept for seatbelts, there were no women present. And so there was no perspective. There was no one there to take the perspective of a smaller, petite woman in the design of a seatbelt. And even still today, women are more likely to be seriously injured or killed in an automobile accident because there was no diversity in the room.
Wow.
Second point I want to bring up is that about that old adage of working harder, keeping your head down and work hard. There's a book, and I can't remember the name of it, but it talks about the PIE method, and it's performance, image, and exposure. And it prefaces that as the key to career success, which is counter to the narrative that we may have grown up with which is keep your head down, work hard, work twice as hard, and you'll eventually get there. Because you definitely got to have the performance, but that's only 20% of this. It's only 10%. Image is 20%, I think, and exposure is 70%.
Wow.
Meaning that you have to do those things like going to the bar. So I tell black ERG members that all the time. You got to go to those after work events if you want to succeed, because your name has to be known in order to get ahead, because the power majority, if they don't know you, they can't advocate for you. So,
to simplify what you just said, and if we could, I would like to simplify, that's in a sense how the game's always been played, and people might not like what I'm about to say, but you can take race out of that, right? It's just culturally, if it hasn't been your nature to do it, and I understand it, it's kind of like your natural response may be, why I got to go to that? I don't even like that or whatever. And so while that can work in your own personal life, the reality is cultural capital is how you get that 70% that you just highlighted. Keith, we only got a few more minutes, brother, but if anything that you want to highlight, I really just want to say thank you for being a part of this conversation. We are at the end of the show, but again, thank you for being a part of it. If there's anything you want to throw out in this last few minutes before I let Latrice give out her public information, I want to thank you and Brent for holding down this show. I think we had a lively conversation, but thank you for being with us, Keith.
Hey, no problem. I was glad to be here. I do want to highlight one specific thing. And that's that for anybody out there listening to the show or for parents or anything like that, listen, being an airline pilot, one of the best jobs in the world. I get this quote all the time. I'm like, man, it's the best part-time job for full-time money you can find. And pulling any of the negative stuff shoot you off the rails. If you want to become a pilot, just like Brant said, man, if you want to, you can do it. All right. Thanks, guys.
Nah, thank you, man. Great conversation. Glad to have you on. I thought you were you still in Atlanta? I didn't realize you were still here. You still here?
Oh yeah, no, I'm up in the burbs, up in Cobb. But yeah.
Yeah, okay, I can dig it. I need to get you down to one of the live experiences, man. I think you'll enjoy it. We got a good one next month. So if you're not doing anything on the third Friday, let's try to get you downtown, you know, getting a love. Following your son, doing his music career. And again, thank you for being a part of the show this morning. Brent, one last thought from you, and I'm going to let Latrice close it out for anybody that may want to get her service as well. But thank both of you for coming on this morning.
Hey, all these airlines, these major airlines out here are having these initiatives to get people from what they call zero to hero, 0 hours to a pilot. United is Aviate. Delta's is Propel. Southwest has one called Destination 225. All the airlines have something that helps with financing, get you into a structured training environment, a high-level training environment. There's opportunities out there for us.
Nah, perfect. And that's the real reason we did the show. For anybody out there that's interested in this topic, if you know youth that want to be a part of it, you've been exposed to several programs. Brent just gave out a few for the major airlines. We had Torin on talking about the Young Aviation Program. So at the end of the day, it gave us an excuse to get that information out. Thank you, Latrice, once again, Queen of Intellect, holding me down. I kept it from Toastmasters today, so I definitely owe you one. But if you will, Queen, any information you want to get out publicly, any last thoughts as well, thank you for being with us this morning.
Sure. The name of my company is humanizingdiversity.com. If you wanted to reach out to me, you can reach out to me at latricebross@gmail.com. I am on LinkedIn at Latrice Ross. You can find me there. Otherwise, I've definitely enjoyed the dialogue. I actually got my bestie on the call today because she's training her youngest son. He's in training now to be a pilot.
Now, I love it. If you're in the Atlanta area, you still got time to join us for Your Tours ATL, the best Black History tour in Atlanta at 2 p.m. today. DM me for the information. I'll see those in Atlanta at 2 o'clock. Other than that, talk to y'all next Saturday. All I ask is that you think.
My fave apps can be lifesavers. Social apps, video apps, messaging apps. But my McDonald's app is giving off main app energy. Not only does it let me order ahead, skip the line, and get my food fast, I can use it to get exclusive deals, like a $5 combo meal with an all-beef Big Mac, a medium order of fries, and a medium ice-cold Coca-Cola. With exclusive deals like a $5 combo meal, the McD app is the main app I can't live without. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Offer valid through 3/31/2024. Participating McDonald's. Valid once a day. Must opt into rewards. Coca-Cola is a registered trademark of the Coca-Cola Company.
With year-end approaching, it's time to get to the bottom of your bottom line with Xero. That's Xero spelled X-E-R-O. Xero is accounting software that makes closing your books seamless. With your numbers in one place, organizing and reporting back on your finances can be much easier, saving you time so you can focus on your business goals instead of spreadsheets. Get financial peace of mind and make the switch to Xero today. Learn more at xero.com. Xero, accounting software for better business.